otherwise
Anthony
known as Hadlin.
Hadlin Hansen.
Yeah, Anson Hansen.
No.
But anyways, yeah.
Okay. Handsome Hansen?
Anson Hansen.
How would you describe yourself?
In four
words.
Sentence.
Yeah,
in okay. one sentence?
One sentence.
AKA four words.
Or a couple sentences.
Four words? Magician on a mission. There we go.
Woo!
That's right.
Now extend it.
Now extend it? Yeah, just a mystery, enigmatic entertainer that resides currently in Canada that's on a mission to help a billion people smile with my art.
This guy's practice it in the mirror, for sure.
I say it on the phone all the time.
Yeah.
I leave a lot of voicemails.
Yeah.
Is that like your thing? That's like your tagline? Would you say like your...
Magician on a mission?
Yeah.
It happens to be now, yeah. Yeah, that's the mission, so it is the tagline, I suppose. I guess you could call it a tagline.
Let's travel back in time.
Okay.
Let's travel back in time.
Technically speaking, this is a travel back in time because by the time this is over, it'll be back in time. So it's true.
Okay. Well, let's double jump.
Double jump.
Back in time to where it all began for you. And, you know, this is obviously the centerpiece of your life right now. And like,
this is in Saskatoon?
As in Magician on a Mission.
Mm, yes.
It's the centerpiece of your life, right? It's the foundation currently.
Right.
So let's dive back. Let's right. double jump back to why, where, when, how. Where's that spark?
Where's the spark for the mission?
The Magician on a Mission.
Yeah.
And the first...
Because it feels like I'm just getting started anyways. Like,
sure.
I've been doing it full time since 2011.
Sure, but like the origin story.
Origin story? Yeah. So as a young Filipino boy... Growing up on the east side of Saskatoon, and I'm being real dramatic with it. I don't know. My grandpa, he's actually my late grandfather, Efren Pereira Sr. He taught me my first magic tricks, the first one being like such a clever method. I won't share the method, but I'll share what it looks like from a spectator's point of view. And the spectator takes a toothpick, places the toothpick into a cloth. You fold the cloth up, the spectator takes the cloth, feels the toothpick, breaks it. And then the spectator, it's doing all the work, by the way, the spectator, like the magician's just there, or me as a child is just there. And then they grab the corners, let go, and then out falls a toothpick that is restored back to normal. Mm. No breaks, nothing is perfect. You could break it again if you wanted to. Mm. But yeah, to learn the method of how something like that works, that fools adults, and I was only like 7 or 8 at the time. Mm. It was like, opened my mind from that moment forward to look at the world through the lens of a magician, knowing that, you know, there's things that are happening, but there's always, not always, but oftentimes there's something a layer deeper. And to go forward with that type of practice in my mind from that young age was super formative. The only issue is at that age, shortly thereafter, one of my other grandparents, so that's on my mother's side. On my father's side, I was really close with my grandmother, and she was like, we were like this, she's like my best friend, right? And spent a lot of time with her, and then suddenly she was just stripped away from us. She passed away from cancer. Mm-hmm. And being so close with somebody and then having that stripped away and removed from me at such a young age, it threw me into this shell. Like I grew this metaphorical shell and I just hid inside of it. But having that spark of magic prior to that, I still continued on as like, you know, thinking about the mystery, about the deceptive arts, about illusions and all this and that. And
so magic
being
was
drawn to it.
The lifeline, kind of?
Not necessarily. It was more like that was there and I would like practice it in solitude, but not with any intent of doing anything with it.
Yeah.
But knowing, more so practicing the deceptive arts on different aspects. But like being in that shell that entire time, that was like, you know, because I went through practice of, you know, did a lot of magic, didn't do anything. Did a lot, did nothing. And through the adolescent years, you know, only being able to talk to two people and not more than that without turning beet red, you know, and then it wasn't until after high school was over that we were in, I was in university just as every other kid and learning, you know, all these different things, science, everything. Oh man, there's a whole world more that I didn't even know, because you're at that age, you're like, I think I know everything. And everybody's wondering, what am I doing for the rest of my life? That was everyone's question. And I was like, that's a good question. And then a friend, acquaintance of sorts, I call friend, yeah, sure. He did a magic trick in person that just fried my brain. And it was from that moment that I was like, wait a minute, that stuff I was doing before, that was great. But now that is like next level. What is that? I hounded him all night. He told me one piece of information that led me down a rabbit hole of more information and just opened my brain up to what was actually possible with magic. Cause up until then, you know, I just like the beginner books, beginner knowledge. And I thought I knew everything until that moment realized, oh shoot. No, that's just the beginning. This thing is an endless ocean.
Yeah.
So dove into that, learned so much in a small period of time where I actually did 8 to 10 hours a day of practice for the next 3 years from 17 to 20. And in that time, skipped a lot of university and just practiced magic. I would actually pretend to go to university, leave my parents' house, but then I would just go practice magic in a mirror, just literally sitting there, you know, oh, what's that? Okay. Just, I don't know. I just got obsessed with it. And then that turned into performing that and actually trying it on somebody, trying it on family. They're super supportive, trying it on friends, coworkers. Everyone was like, wow, dude, this is amazing. Giving me energy. And then that slowly from the inside started breaking the shell open. It started peeking through until eventually that shell just started disappearing, disintegrating. And that was really what actually finally broke the shell that I was in that entire like decade and a half. And that's where the spark got reignited. And that's where when I made the decision, I'm gonna be a magician.
At what point? What age?
The moment he did that trick, the coin in the can to the thing and the what?
And you made, at that point, you said,
like, that's it.
That's it.
I found it.
I know what I'm doing.
And there was
no doubt
in your mind.
Not a doubt in my mind, no.
So what, I'm just more curious about, like, because it takes a lot to motivate somebody to do 8 hours a day of something, right?
Yeah.
I'm just curious more about what the process of your motivation was and what were the things, like, it must have been more than just that trick. It must have been, right?
I think I was just picking up really, really quickly because also on like my prior experience in the deceptive arts, the illusions and the, like the basics, like simple little coin tricks here and there. That was like a good base. And then not only that, I was known as a fiddler in every single one of my report cards. I was known as, this kid likes to fiddle. And I'm just like manipulating pens or, you know, erasers and different things underneath the desk.
Not a fiddler?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, just fiddling, you know? And like biology class, for instance, in high school, just learning the spin around the pen, dropping the pen, like probably annoyed the fuck out of everybody. Thousands of drops.
Yeah.
I got it. But yeah, I don't know. Basically, where I'm going with that is that like my dexterity was always really good.
Yeah.
So learning harder magic tricks and learning, oh, wait, you can palm a card and no one will know? Interesting. Okay, what else can you do? Mm-hmm. And then to be able to take those skills and then learn them and then do them immediately. Learn them, do them immediately. And then I was like, wow, I can learn this fast. I just learned this trick an hour ago and I'm blowing their mind now. And then just stacking on top of each other more and more and more and more. And then now it's at the point where I need to practice something for months before, because like I'm trying to learn harder things now.
Yeah, the level of trick.
I didn't know that the level of magic that I'm doing now existed at that time.
Yeah.
Because until you go through that, you don't know what actually is there.
Do you think you
open the door?
Put your 10,000 hours in?
I don't know, man. Good question. I think they say 10 years is the requirement, but I'm over 10 years, but I don't know. It feels like I'm just starting, so.
It's a part of you now.
Do you learn from other like mentors and people?
Yeah.
Or do you learn from like courses? Like how do all you progress in magic?
All of the above. At first it was self-motivated, getting books, DVDs, you know, videos, buying things online, downloading them. And
there's a lot of secrets in magic, isn't there?
Tons of secrets,
things that people don't even want to divulge because it's something they've created themselves, correct?
100%. I got lots of those.
and that's kind of the point, I think, that you're at now, where you cross the threshold where now maybe some of the stuff that you're learning is like, you can't learn it in books.
Interesting. I think everything's already in the books. It's just no one's willing to go through the books.
Mm.
So they say if you want to keep a secret, you put it in a book.
Right. So, like an audiobook?
Yeah. So like, I mean, magic books are amazing with that. So it's just, some of the books that I first got when I first started, and I read them, I'm like, I don't know what they're talking about.
Mm.
You know, 5-10 years later, oh, dang, that's gold.
Mm.
But trying to apply that to today and rework them to make them for today, because sometimes they're talking about like, oh, you got a cassette tape on stage, and like, well, they won't be doing that these days. But so just trying to apply things for the now.
I remember when I first met you, Hadlin, you talked about you really wanted to make a billion people smile, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
What do you think it is about magic that impacts people? What do people feel when they go to your shows? How do you see the transformation in people from, you know, when they walk into a hypnotist show or a magician show with you, or when you're doing street magic, until after? What do you think your impact is to those billion people that you want to impact?
So to answer that, I'm going to, I guess, you know, show you the big picture of that. And the real message that I want to portray with helping a billion people smile is really like, in order to do that, it's not just going to be Canada. It's not just going to be the States. It's got to be across the globe. And I want to show, not only show, but I want to, first off, go to every single country in the world, perform for the locals there. And in doing so, that will show the world that we're all the same. Like, they're using magic as a language to cross and transcend barriers from different cultures, from different walks of life, from poor to rich, to across the globe, to oppressed countries, to free countries, you know, and just show that, you know, someone across on the other side of the world can have the exact same experience and the exact same reaction as somebody on this side of the world, and show like, you know, our upbringings are all different, but at the core of it all, we're all the same.
Magic is almost a language that you can communicate with someone without words. Sure.
Oh, yes.
That's very beautiful. Yeah. I never thought of it like that.
Yes, definitely. And performing magic without words is very valuable in the world, because
it's you can connect with everyone. You can connect with anyone,
mm-hmm.
anywhere,
yeah.
through that magic.
That's right.
And it is it's a dance. It's a dance between the performer and the audience.
Yes.
Because you can't, maybe you can do magic without an audience, but that's kind of, it's
right. And I mean, that's the moment you start doing videos on the internet where it's just you and a camera, and it's like, that's not what magic's meant to be.
Right.
Magic is an experience. It's creating and writing a memory in somebody's brain.
Mm.
It is writing it in your mind from their perspective, and then delivering that to a person. So that way, not only can they experience it now, but they can experience it over and over and over when they tell that story to people.
Yeah.
And helping them tell that story by writing that story for them.
Yeah, I feel like our daily lives, the average person's daily lives nowadays is consistent and not very exciting a lot of the times. And I feel that some of the times, you know. I think that's just a natural experience of our current society and our world. So that's been my experience with magic through you, is like watching you take somebody's average, normal, whatever day and just totally flip it around.
Dude, I know. It's
gives them a sense of wonder. Gives them a sense of like,
yeah,
life isn't what it seems all the time.
That's right. Exactly. And it's literally my responsibility, and every other magician's out there, it's our responsibility as magicians to perform good magic for people. So that way, because a lot of times, like 99% of the time, people haven't actually seen magic in person. They've seen it online, they see it on video, but to see it and experience it in person, where the way it's meant to be, not many people have actually experienced that. So then as a magician, you need to remember that that experience, that could be their first and only time ever seeing and experiencing magic. So we got to make sure that we give them the best possible story to tell. And by giving them that story, that then, in a weird way, kind of changes their life, because that story they tell and tell and tell and tell, and that story wasn't there before. So it's a huge responsibility to make sure that you take care of the audience and guide them through a journey that means something.
You can also see how it really brings people together. During Easter, I was at, I like to call my second family's house, and they had a hypnotist come out.
Oh, yeah.
And how the energy in the room was before till after that hypnotist came was really cool to see, because it's like we all witnessed something together. We all shared an experience together, and we were more connected because of that.
Amazing.
It's very amazing.
Yeah, man.
Hypnotism is a whole other...
Oh, yeah. It's very related and yet so different at the same time. I like to lump it together. It's actually... So the way I look at it is like, there's magic, there's mentalism. They're very similar. One's, you know, illusions. One's magic of the mind. And then there's hypnotism, which is, you know, the power of the mind. And to be able to... In the way I envision is to merge them all together and blur the line as to, oh, this looks like hypnosis, but it's magic. Oh, this looks like magic, but it's hypnosis. Mm. And, oh, maybe it's, you know, just to merge them all together, because it's a mystery art form. And that's the way I like to present it.
How do you do that? How do you merge it? What's an example?
What's an example? So, for instance, you know, you can hypnotize somebody, and as you hypnotize them, you know, maybe you have them hand you a personal piece of property that they have on their body. And maybe they hand you a wallet. So you take their ID out of their wallet, or you put a playing card in their wallet and put it back in their pocket, get them to forget it completely. And then when they wake up, you go, okay, hey, I want you to pick a card. Boom, and they pick a card and make it vanish. And now it's in their wallet, because you planted the card in the wallet beforehand, for instance, right? So that one example. Or another could be, you know, you're on stage and you have a bunch of blank pieces of paper, and you get the hypnotized people to imagine they are $100 bills, right? And then people on stage are like, what? That's great. They're reacting to it. But now the audience isn't hypnotized. So now you do magic and actually change them to $100 bills. And now the audience isn't sure if they're hypnotized too.
I like that stuff. I think that's my favorite, where the audience is getting the peek inside, like they're part of the performance a little bit. I think that's kind of the online form. I know you say that you don't want to perform magic to a camera, obviously. I get that. Like,
you don't get the reaction live.
I want the camera to just happen to be there.
Yes. Yes, so that makes sense, where like your online content is you, a person, and a camera. The camera is the audience, and the person kind of getting the third.
That's how I have done it. I personally am trying to go away from that, because it seems to be less relatability when it's when you're just watching a video of a magician do something. It's like, if there was someone else there, you know, they do this in movies, right? When, you know, if it's a movie that's like really, really scientific, they'll throw a regular Joe in that movie.
To do just the explaining.
So that, exactly, they can explain it to that regular Joe, which is the audience's relatability into it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's where, you know, performing for people of all walks of life is the best plan of moving forward, in my mind.
Yeah.
That's the way I want to do it anyways. That's the only way to get to a billion smiles is you just got to keep performing. Keep making smiles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Keep documenting the smiles.
Go ahead. Okay. So,
we're both so like, you go ahead.
You go ahead. You know what happened? You go ahead.
Okay. So what's your guys' experience with magic? So you saw hypnosis recently, but what's the last time you saw magic?
Probably with you when you did it over our video call last time.
Yeah, I happened to do it on video. That's
but
funny.
But you know, like,
because Saul prompted me to be like, you got to do that more on video.
Oh, it's
otherwise it, I probably wouldn't.
I remembered that, brother. Though, like, my whole day was like freaking Hadlin. Like, I was like, how does he do this shit? Like, my mind was just messed with all day. But it was like cool because I was like, it seemed like I was more like present or something. I was just like. I just had that sense of wonderment, right? Mm-hmm. I was Googling shit. How do people do magic? So now I need to figure it out. I mean, whenever you don't know something, you want to figure it out, at least for me.
Maybe people can ask ChatGPT one day how to do a magic trick, and it'll tell them.
Yeah. I'm sure they can right now.
I mean, I've tried, but it comes up with some, like I said, it comes up with some weird explanations. It's just, I don't know if that would actually work, but.
My experience with magic is interesting. It's like the rebellion in me comes out, and I want this thing comes out where it, whether I know how it's done or not, I will deny that I don't know how it's done. Always. Across the board, I'll even deny it somehow internally and be like, no, I know how it's done. Somehow in there. I don't consciously know it, but I know how it's done. I don't know what it's it so is. Funny. I don't know what it is. Every time you perform magic for me, I'm like, yeah, I know.
I think I got it.
Yeah, I get it.
No problem.
I know what's
happening.
I'll do
it. I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah, easy. But it does generate an emotion. Mm-hmm. It generates something that I can't say. I can't identify experiencing that feeling anywhere else.
Yeah, that's something I want to try to open the door for more people is like a different way to experience magic, because a lot of people go with that frame of thinking.
Yeah.
And if I can somehow communicate to people how, you know, magic is real because a magician is practicing this magic, and we've all done it for hours and hours in a mirror to practice it and perform it for people. So therefore it's real. It's just the definition that other people have of magic is different. My definition of magic is misdirection, is performance, is psychology, is redirection, is attention. You know, it's economy of motion. It's all these things wrapped together. Whereas the, you know, other people's definition of magic is, oh, Harry Potter, wave a wand. It's mystical, right? But like, I want people to look at magic like they do at somebody doing a guitar solo. Like, the only difference is someone doing a guitar solo, you can see everything that's happening. You can see how it happens.
We can comprehend it.
Whereas magic, when it works, you don't see how it happens.
Well, it makes us, to try to define my feeling, maybe there's a thing inside of me that feels stupid.
Mm.
Right? And I'm like...
So that's on me. I need to be able to perform so that people don't feel that way.
Yeah.
They feel more open to... Wow.
I don't know what that would be, whether that's a prompt or something, but yeah, it's like it's like a puzzle that I can't figure out.
Yeah.
But I want to, right? And I feel like that's how they feel one of two ways. They're like, "Oh my god, you're a wizard." You're straight up a wizard, or they're like, "This guy, you know.
He's fooling me.
Got me."
Yeah, either wonderment or like frustration. I'm sure you've seen a little bit of both. Oh, what are people's reactions? Or some different types of reactions from
my
people.
My favorite is when they scream and run away. And
that's good.
Just on that, it's, you know, when I'm at a gig or something, you know, I'll try to scan the room beforehand and see what group could be the one with the most energy. because that as the first group that I approach sets the tone for the entire room. Because if they are loud, scream, run away, everyone else will too. Yeah. It tells everybody this is how to do it. This is how to react. So, yeah, I want to.
What's the worst reaction?
I want to find those people. The worst. The worst I would say are just people that heckle, I guess. Yeah. You know, they'll grab the cards. They'll inject themselves into the performance.
Really? You've had that, eh?
Oh,
yeah, for sure.
Less these days. Okay. My audience management's gone a lot better. Still a lot of work required, but yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's a whole subset is audience management.
Maybe because they feel out of control, so they're trying to take control.
Right.
It's that you're, like, we tend to want to control and understand everything in our reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're just showing them to their face something that they cannot comprehend. And they have no control over.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it probably scares some people.
100%. There's some groups of people out there, some communities that won't hire me because they think it's the devil's magic or something.
Whoa.
Yeah, man, that's a real thing.
I can see it.
I mean, maybe not that as a real thing, but the people that don't want to hire me because they think that's a real thing.
So maybe you...
It's not a real thing.
Or is it?
Maybe you
need... But that's exactly what a magician who practices the dark arts would say. So, what do you
think? That's so good.
So what is...
So what do you think? Do I practice the dark arts? I don't know.
I think you do. Modern day dark arts.
I felt it.
What does 2023 magic look like? I feel like we've seen a lot of archaic magic. Like when people think of magic, I think their visual and their definition is old school.
Yep, like top hat and you know, proper suit. Like, 100%.
So what do you think? Do you have a vision for a rebrand of what that kind of looks like?
I do have a vision. It may be a little... too crazy to say on camera, because I had some big goals and aspirations that, I mean, if I were to tease that now, then there would be, I don't want to say it on the record, because when I do it, I don't want people to know it was me.
Okay. That's all we need. That's all we need.
Yeah.
Foreshadow. I wanted to touch on the, you know, the part of you that I kind of related to, because you said you used to be a guy that was really shy. Yeah. How did magic help you become less shy and more connected to people?
Oh, man. Yeah. I hid behind the magic for so long where the shell was in the midst of the shell breaking, you know, the magic was the barrier still, where I could have people's attention here. So they weren't really looking at me. They were looking at the magic, you know,
right? So you could still hide behind it. You didn't.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was your way of putting yourself out there, but not really.
Right. Right. There was still some security. So I shifted the shell to something else, to like a shield of sorts. And you could actually see it in the earlier performances. I would have my case on stage between myself and the audience. Mm. And then when I started learning hypnosis, that's where it went to a different level, I guess you could call that. You know, not only did I charge more, but now there was no props. I was forced to be in front of people and have nothing hiding between me and the audience. So now I bring that not only in my hypnosis shows, but in my magic shows. The case is off to the side. It's gone. It's not even in frame. You know, if I need to grab something from it, we grab something from it, but it's written in to the show. Hmm. Or the new set design that I'm working on will have essentially case aspects, case like properties where it can hold props used for your later routines, but in the design of the set that I'm creating for the next stage of my public show.
Mm. I look forward to seeing that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've heard some.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know the precursor of it.
But yeah.
Not ready yet though.
I want to touch
many things not ready.
But yeah, well, that's the life of a magician or a performer is a lot of time behind the scenes to get ready for what you're presenting.
Right.
I want to touch a little bit, only a little bit, because I feel like it's not something that you're totally, that you might totally want to dive into, but you are one of the most like powerful. I don't know if that's the right word. You are one of the most potent, powerful, potent. You're one of the most put together.
Powerful dark magic.
Yes, exactly. Dark magic. That's probably what it is, realistically. But you're one of the most.
I used to portray dark magic really in my old marketing. It was very dark and mysterious.
Well, that's a magic thing, right?
Like,
well,
yeah,
that's a common. Cliche. Yeah. But
so not powerful, but what?
You're a potent.
Potent.
Put together. business person.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
You are.
I'm working on it, man.
No, you are. Seriously. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. From the perspective of somebody who's at a certain point of business, you're a person who's been consistently at it for such a long time. And it's been side by side. Like all this stuff we've talked about during this whole process, you've also been accruing skills as a business person.
Right.
And it's gone hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So I want to hear a little bit about that side of it and how they've...
The business side of it?
Yeah, and how you...
Well, where do I begin?
That's what I mean.
That's a whole podcast by itself.
I know, but, touch on it a little bit.
Touch on it a little bit. Oh, shit. Well, I need help. Where do you want me to begin? Because right now my mind goes to, like, what I'm currently on, but, like, you know, it grew so much over the years that it's, like, it was so basic before, and I started doing things recently that it's, like, man, I knew... And like, I knew that this is the unlock, and I've known it for like a decade, but I just didn't do it. Mm. And that was cold calls, literally just picking up the phone and calling prospecting, boom, boom, you know, following up.
So before cold calls, how'd you get business?
I was just word of mouth. It was my online SEO, my website. It was more of just like a... Put my website out, had a contact form, and I was like, come on, give me gigs. I survived. Somehow I always managed to make just enough money to get by, to pay rent, to eat. And I lived like that, like make a lot, make nothing. Make a lot, make nothing.
How long do you think that was, that period of time?
From 2011 until like 2021, till the end of the pandemic.
So you never had a job? You were full-time doing magic and your own thing?
Yeah, there was...
From 17 or 18 onwards?
How old was I? How old was I in 2011?
Yeah. Math. You asking us?
24. No, I'm... math. I think I was 24. 21. I was born in 87. Someone else do the math. Is that right? 14 years. Someone 24 listening? Years. Sorry, 24 years. I wasn't 14. 24. I used to be really good at math. I don't know what happened. I'm just kidding. But that's such a Canadian thing to say.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, the business has grown a lot as far as like actually knowing what to do, because like you spoke earlier in your segment in part one of this three-part series is that, you know, we go through and we don't have any clue what we're supposed to do. We're trying to figure it out. We get clues here and there of other people doing it, and we just like take a little bit here and then, okay, let me try something. Let me iterate on that and continue to iterate on that. And that's just exactly what I've done. Basically, when you were saying that, I was like, yeah, that's my business experience in life. Mm. And right now I think I'm doing the right thing, but it's still just a test. I don't know.
It's a continual evolution.
Yeah.
But it feels really good now.
It does. It's all new heights. Like I know right now that I don't have to hope there's going to be a gig in the inbox, which helps too. Cause now when people inquire, I can tell them, hey, my minimum's 3,000. And if you can't meet that minimum, you know, I don't have people being like, well, I'll give you 25. Oh, I'll give you five. I'll give you, you know, I can just say no to all of them.
Yeah.
And I can feel good about that, which feels really good. To be able to say no to gigs is like so powerful.
Yeah.
I feel really good about that.
Yeah, you stepped into the next evolution of business. And that's yeah, something I admire and something that I learn a lot from observing your journey with it.
I think if I can just add one thing to that is that throughout my full-time journey, I've been like full-time, but then I'd like pick up an odd job here and there where it's like just a side thing, where it's like, hey, yeah, you wanna, like I've shot weddings before in Mexico. Yeah. Like, that's random. Yeah. But it's because I picked up video skills for my magic business that someone else was like, hey, that could be used for this. And I was like, oh, I'll try it. Why not? Extra money's extra money. But not realizing at the time that saying yes to these other things is taking away from the focus on the magic side. So now, in the last year and a half or 2 years or so, I've been really adamant about, okay, this is it.
This is your thing.
I say no to everything else. It's, like, there's nothing else. It's just, that's it.
It's so interesting for me because it's like, before, and when I was talking about my thing, it was like, I love that I have 9 different things. I was like, I couldn't do just one. And
right.
It seems but like you are.
I'm different, though. That's different. The thing.
It's really cool to see that.
Mm-hmm. That's been my unlock, right? Not to say that your unlock is any better or worse, right? It's just what works best for each other. And that's what I found has been working the best for me. And yeah, man, I've always thought that I had to do this side business to build a marketing budget for my magic. Mm. And I was like, oh, no, what if I just put all attention into magic? Well, now I have a marketing budget. Oh shit. Now I'm great. Now I'm good. I don't have money problems anymore. Fuck yeah.
He's unlocked level 2 of 9,000.
Literally only level 2. Hey, maybe 1.5.
Hey, I'm at like 0.68.
We're all getting there.
We're all getting there.
In our own little ways.
I've been talking a lot, so let's move on to Saw.